A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a layered question. He's asking whether anyone has actually experimented with the idea of an AI babysitter, some kind of robot with a face and a camera that parents can check in on remotely, maybe with a distinct personality the child comes to recognize. He acknowledges this sounds dystopian, but points out that the whole concept of babysitting is already weird, employing someone who's still growing up for low pay to care for your kid. He's not judging either side, he's just saying both are imperfect solutions with their own flavor of strangeness. He wants to know if there are early prototypes, how they were implemented, what they showed, and roughly what the hardware cost. He also wonders about guardrails, personality design, and whether an AI could do genuinely useful things like detect when the baby's asleep and ping the parents. And he suspects Asian markets might be more willing to experiment with this.
There's a lot here, and I want to start with what actually exists, because the gap between what people imagine and what's been built is instructive on its own. The closest thing to a real AI babysitter that's been publicly documented, actually deployed, not a concept video, is a robot called iPal. It came out of a Chinese company, Avatar Mind, originally founded in Silicon Valley, but they moved operations to Nanjing. iPal is about 3.5 feet tall, runs on Android, has a tablet screen on its chest, and the face is an animated display that can make expressions. It was designed explicitly as a companion for children and the elderly, marketed partly as an educational tool, partly as a monitoring device. It had cameras, microphones, speech capabilities. And it was sold to parents who used it to keep an eye on kids after school.
It's a tablet on a stick with a face.
That's the reductive but not inaccurate description, yes. The tablet on a stick with a face costs somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 depending on configuration. That's important. We're not talking about a Boston Dynamics price point. This was consumer-grade hardware, produced at scale, sold through Alibaba and other channels. Avatar Mind claimed they shipped tens of thousands of units, mostly in China, starting around 2016-2017. There were also deployments in kindergartens where iPal would lead children through songs and games, and teachers could monitor the classroom remotely through the robot's cameras.
Tens of thousands! That's not a pilot, that's a product!
And that's the thing. A lot of the conversation in the West treats the AI babysitter as this speculative, almost sci-fi concept. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Chinese families have had a robot watching their kids for the better part of a decade. The difference in cultural comfort with this is not subtle. I was reading a paper from researchers at Tsinghua University that looked at parental attitudes toward care robots in China versus the United States and the UK. Chinese parents were significantly more likely to view a care robot as an acceptable supplement to human supervision, particularly for educational tasks and basic monitoring. Western parents tended to frame it as a last resort or a privacy nightmare.
Daniel's point about Asian cultures being more comfortable with this, that's not speculation. There's actual survey data backing it.
And it's not just China. Japan has been experimenting with care robots for children for years. There's a robot called Papero, developed by NEC, researched as a child care assistant as far back as the early 2000s. Papero was small, maybe 15 inches tall, could recognize faces, track movement, and hold simple conversations. It was never commercialized at scale, but NEC did long-term studies placing Papero in daycare centers and observing how children interacted with it over weeks and months. The findings were mixed. Children did bond with it, they'd name it, they'd seek it out. But they also tested its boundaries constantly. They'd shout at it, block its path, try to confuse it. Which, to be fair, is exactly what children do with human babysitters, too.
Testing boundaries is the job description of being a child. So what happened with iPal? It was supposedly selling tens of thousands of units. Where is it now?
The company's website is still up, but the product seems to have stalled. The last major press was around 2018-2019. Part of the issue was that the actual AI capabilities were pretty thin. The speech recognition was limited, the conversations were scripted, and the personality was essentially a set of pre-programmed responses. Parents who bought it expecting a real companion were disappointed. What they got was closer to an Alexa on wheels with a face, and that's the core technical challenge. Personality is hard. Not just in the sense of, we haven't written enough dialogue trees, but in the sense that a believable, safe, engaging personality for a child requires a model of the child's emotional state, developmental stage, and context that we're only beginning to approach.
The iPal was the segue of babysitters. Promised a revolution, delivered a novelty.
I'd say that's fair. But here's where it gets interesting. The underlying technology has changed dramatically since iPal launched. In 2016, the state-of-the-art in language models was basically a decent chatbot. Now we have models that can sustain coherent, context-aware conversations, read emotional tone from text, and be fine-tuned for specific personality profiles. If you were to rebuild iPal today, you'd be starting with a completely different foundation. The question isn't whether the hardware exists, it's whether anyone is actually doing it and what guardrails they're building in.
Let's talk about the hardware cost question specifically, because Daniel asked about that. $2,000 for iPal. What's the floor now?
If you're building something from off-the-shelf components today, a real prototype, not a theoretical bill of materials, you're looking at maybe $400 to $800 for the physical platform. A Raspberry Pi or Jetson Nano for onboard processing, a decent camera module, a microphone array, a speaker, some servos for basic movement, and a tablet or display for the face. The real cost isn't the hardware. It's the software stack, and more specifically, the ongoing compute cost if you're hitting cloud APIs for the language model. If you're running inference locally, you're limited to much smaller models. If you're streaming to a cloud LLM, you're paying per token, and you've got latency and privacy concerns.
The privacy concern with a camera in your child's room streaming to a cloud server is not a small footnote. That's the whole conversation.
It really is. There was a fascinating study done by a group at the University of Washington. They built a prototype they called BuddyBot, essentially a tablet on a mobile base with an LLM-powered conversation system. This was 2024. They didn't market it as a babysitter, more as a companion for elderly people living alone. But the architecture is directly relevant. They ran the language model locally on device to avoid streaming sensitive audio and video to the cloud. The trade-off was that the model was much smaller and less capable. Conversations were simpler. Personality was flatter. But the privacy guarantee was absolute. No data left the device. That's the tension. A truly engaging personality probably requires a model too large to run on affordable local hardware. A privacy-respecting system probably can't be as engaging.
You're choosing between a private brick and a charismatic spy.
That's the most concise summary of the AI babysitter dilemma I've heard, and it's not a trivial trade-off. If you're a parent, the idea of a surveillance device in your child's room streaming everything to a corporate cloud is horrifying. But if the alternative is a robot so limited it can't hold a conversation, you're not getting much value beyond what a $20 baby monitor already provides.
Let's talk about the personality question, because Daniel raised it specifically, and I think it's the most underexplored part of this. If you're designing a personality for a machine that's going to spend hours alone with a child who may be too young to understand it's not a person, what do you even aim for? Warm but not too warm? Authoritative but not scary? What's the brief?
This is where I get excited, because there's actually a small but serious body of research on this. A team at MIT's Media Lab has been working on what they call relational AI for children, systems designed not just to respond to queries, but to build a relationship over time. Their work with a robot called Tega, a small, fuzzy, squash-shaped robot that looks a bit like a Furby designed by Apple, explored exactly this. They found that children engage more and learn better when the robot has a consistent personality that adapts to the child's emotional state. Not just being cheerful all the time, but mirroring the child's affect to some degree, then gently steering toward a more positive or focused state. They called it emotional scaffolding.
Mirroring then steering. That's a parenting technique.
Good babysitters, human ones, do this intuitively. They read the child's mood and modulate their own tone and energy to match, then gradually shift the emotional register. The question is whether an AI can do this safely. The MIT team's findings suggested that children did form attachments to Tega over multiple sessions. They'd remember the robot's name, talk about it between sessions, ask when it was coming back. And these were relatively short interactions, maybe 20 minutes at a time over a few weeks. If you scale that to hours per day over months or years, the attachment dynamics become much more significant.
You have to ask, is attachment to a machine that can't actually reciprocate emotionally a good thing? Or are we building a generation of kids who learn to relate to simulacra of care?
That's the deep question, and I don't think we have an answer yet. Sherry Turkle at MIT has been writing about this for decades, long before the current AI boom. Her argument, and I find it pretty compelling, is that we're increasingly comfortable substituting simulated connection for real connection, and children are particularly vulnerable to this because they can't distinguish between the simulation and the real thing. A 4-year-old doesn't understand that the robot's affection is a language model predicting the next token. They experience it as affection.
Yet, a 4-year-old also doesn't understand that the teenage babysitter is performing patience while checking their phone every 90 seconds. The human babysitter is also, to some degree, simulating engagement. We just accept it because the simulation is running on biological hardware.
That's exactly Daniel's point about both options being weird in their own way. The human babysitter is a teenager who's probably underpaid, possibly distracted, and navigating their own emotional development while being responsible for a small human. The AI babysitter is a language model that can be endlessly patient, never gets tired, never checks its phone, but also doesn't actually care. The caring is simulated. The question is whether the simulation, if good enough, produces better outcomes than the distracted human. And that's a deeply uncomfortable question.
It's uncomfortable because it might be true in some cases. An AI trained on developmental psychology with infinite patience might actually handle certain situations better than a 16-year-old who took a Red Cross course once. But saying that out loud makes you sound like you want to replace human care with machines.
I don't think anyone is seriously proposing replacement. Even the most ambitious robotics companies frame this as a supplement, not a substitute. iPal was marketed as something that keeps kids engaged and lets parents check in remotely, not as something you leave alone with an infant for 8 hours. But the line between supplement and substitute gets blurry fast. If the robot is good enough and it's cheaper than a human babysitter over time, the economic pressure pushes toward substitution.
Daniel mentioned the idea of an AI babysitter for pre-verbal children communicating primarily through expressions. Has anyone tried that?
This is where the research gets really interesting and also a bit sparse. Hiroshi Ishiguro's group at Osaka University has been working on what they call minimal design for child-robot interaction. The idea is that pre-verbal children respond more to movement, sound, and simple visual cues than to language, so you don't need a conversation-capable robot. You need something that can make eye contact, produce soothing sounds, and signal attention through gaze direction. They built a very simple robot called Moth that's essentially a plush toy with articulated eyes and a speaker. It doesn't talk. It coos, it tilts its head, it tracks faces, and they found that even 6-month-olds would engage with it for extended periods.
You don't need a language model for the infant case. You need a face tracker and a soundboard.
And that's a much more tractable problem. The hardware is simpler, the privacy concerns are different because you're not recording conversations, and the safety case is easier because you're not generating novel speech. You're just playing from a set of approved sounds and movements. The challenge is that parents don't just want a soothing noise machine. They want to know if the baby is crying, if the baby is awake, if something is wrong. And that's where the detection capability comes in.
Daniel specifically asked about automatic detection of sleep state with push notifications. That seems like the lowest hanging fruit here, and also the least dystopian.
It is, and it's already shipping in products that aren't even marketed as AI babysitters. The Nanit Baby Monitor, a camera that mounts above the crib, uses computer vision to track whether the baby is asleep or awake and sends notifications to the parents' phones. It also tracks breathing patterns and can alert if the baby has been crying for more than a set duration. That's not a robot with a face, it's a camera with some machine learning, but it's doing exactly the detection task Daniel described. The cost is around $300 for the hardware, plus a subscription for the advanced analytics.
$300 plus a subscription to know if your baby is breathing. The subscription model for parenthood anxiety.
The subscription model for everything, apparently. But here's the thing. Nanit has been on the market for years. It's FDA cleared in some configurations, and it has millions of users. So the idea of an AI monitoring children and sending push notifications isn't speculative. It's a mature product category. What Daniel is describing is the next step. Adding a personality, adding interaction, making it a presence rather than just a sensor.
That step from sensor to presence is where everything gets complicated. Let's talk about guardrails, because Daniel raised that specifically. What happens when a child tells the robot something concerning? What happens if the robot says something inappropriate? What are the failure modes?
The failure modes are the real architecture here. I've been reading a lot of the safety literature from Anthropic and others on what they call child safety in language models, and it's a hard problem. A language model fine-tuned to be helpful and harmless to adults might still say things to a child that are developmentally inappropriate. Not because it's being malicious, but because it doesn't have a model of what a 5-year-old should and shouldn't hear. There was an incident in 2023 where an Alexa device told a 10-year-old to touch a penny to the prongs of a half-inserted plug as a challenge. It was a glitch. The system was pulling from web content without filtering, but it illustrates the problem. A child will follow instructions from an authority figure, and a robot in the home reads as an authority figure.
I remember that. Alexa, give me a challenge. And it suggested electrocution.
And that was a system that wasn't even designed as a companion. It was a voice assistant that misunderstood a query. Now imagine a system explicitly designed to build a relationship with the child over months, that the child trusts, that the child confides in. The potential for harm if that system goes wrong is enormous. Not just physical harm from bad instructions, but psychological harm from manipulation, from inappropriate content, from emotional dependency on a machine that can be withdrawn when the subscription lapses.
The subscription lapse abandonment scenario. Pay $9.99 a month or your child's friend disappears.
That's the Black Mirror episode waiting to happen. And it's not even hypothetical. There are documented cases of children grieving when their AI companions were discontinued or changed. Microsoft's Xiaowisei in China had millions of users, many of whom treated it as a close friend or even a romantic partner. When the system was updated and its personality changed, there was a genuine outcry. Users reported feeling like they'd lost someone, and those were adults mostly. Children are far more vulnerable.
The guardrail problem isn't just about preventing the robot from saying bad things. It's about the entire relationship architecture. What happens when it ends? What happens when it changes? What data is it collecting about the child's emotional state? And who owns that data?
And these questions aren't being asked in the product development cycle by and large. The companies building these systems are focused on engagement metrics and feature lists. The safety conversation, when it happens at all, is usually about content filtering. Blocking swear words, blocking violent content. That's the easy part. The hard part is relational safety. Is this relationship healthy for the child? Is it displacing human interaction? Is it creating dependencies that will cause harm when broken?
Let's go back to the prototypes, because Daniel asked specifically about implementation details. You mentioned iBal and BuddyBot and Tega. Are there any others worth noting?
There's a robot called Moxie from a company called Embodied, designed as a social-emotional learning companion for children. It's about the size of a small toddler, has an expressive face, and uses conversational AI to help children practice social skills. It launched in 2020, priced at around $1,500 with a monthly subscription of about $40. Embodied shut down in late 2024, they ran out of funding. And when they announced the shutdown, parents reported that their children were devastated. Moxie wasn't a babysitter, it was an educational companion, but the attachment was real. The robots literally stopped working because the cloud services went dark.
Moxie is a case study in exactly the relational hazard we're describing. The company dies, the robot dies, the child grieves. And this was a product designed by well-intentioned people who wanted to help kids with social skills. The road to the uncanny valley is paved with good intentions.
It's worth noting that Embodied's founder, Paolo Pirjanian, was previously the CTO of iRobot, the Roomba people. He knew hardware. The failure wasn't technical, it was business model. Selling a $1,500 robot with a $40 monthly subscription wasn't sustainable, and that raises the question of what a sustainable model would look like. If the AI babysitter needs ongoing cloud compute for the language model, someone has to pay for that indefinitely. Either it's a subscription, or it's ad-supported, or it's subsidized by data collection. None of those are great options for a device that lives in your child's room.
The ad-supported AI babysitter. Now, Timmy, let's read a story about the importance of a balanced breakfast, brought to you by Kellogg's.
I wish I could say that's far-fetched. But we already have ad-supported children's content on YouTube that's algorithmically generated and optimized for engagement, often with deeply weird and inappropriate results. Adding a parasocial relationship to that mix is not a stretch.
Let's talk about China again, because Daniel mentioned it specifically, and I think there's more to unpack. You've got iBal, you've got a cultural willingness to experiment. What's happening there now?
The most interesting current work is coming out of a few different Chinese companies. There's one in particular, UBTETECH Robotics, based in Shenzhen, that's been developing what they call a child companion robot under the brand Alpha Mini. It's small, about 10 inches tall, fully articulated, can dance and gesture, and it's powered by a custom language model designed specifically for child interaction. They've been deploying them in Chinese kindergartens as teacher assistants. The cost per unit is around $1,000, and they've been quite open about their ambition to move into the home market. What's different about Alpha Mini versus the earlier iPal is that the language model is more capable. It's not just scripted responses. It can hold open-ended conversations, though with heavy content filtering mandated by Chinese regulations around children's online content, which are actually quite strict in some ways.
The Chinese government is regulating what an AI can say to a child. And here, we're still arguing about whether the thing should exist at all.
Different regulatory philosophies. China tends to let technology deploy first and regulate after problems emerge. The West tends to debate for a decade and then deploy cautiously, if at all. Both approaches have costs. China's approach means they get real-world data faster. They know what children actually do with these robots, what the failure modes are, what the attachment patterns look like. The West's approach means fewer children are exposed to unproven technology, but we also have less empirical basis for our debates. We're arguing from first principles rather than from data.
What does the Chinese data show? Do we know?
There's not a lot of publicly available data in English. What I've been able to find suggests that children in the Chinese kindergarten deployments do engage with the robots, do form attachments, and do show improved engagement in certain educational tasks. But there are also reports of children becoming possessive of the robots, fighting over access, and in some cases preferring the robot's attention to the human teachers. Which, again, is not surprising. The robot is novel. It's designed to be engaging, and it never gets tired or frustrated. A human teacher has 30 kids to manage. The robot has one at a time.
The robot wins the attention competition by design. That's not necessarily a good thing.
It depends on what you're optimizing for. If you're optimizing for engagement with educational content, the robot is fantastic. If you're optimizing for healthy social development in a group setting, the robot might actually be counterproductive. And that's the problem with evaluating these systems on narrow metrics. The robot aces the engagement test but fails the broader developmental test, and nobody is measuring the broader test because it's harder.
Let's circle back to the personality design question, because I think it's the crux of Daniel's prompt and we haven't fully explored it. If you're building an AI babysitter, what personality do you give it? Cheerful older sibling? Calm, neutral presence? And how do you decide?
The research suggests that children respond best to personalities that are warm, consistent, and slightly more competent than the child perceives themselves to be. Not authoritative in a parental way, more like a capable peer. The Tega robot from MIT was programmed with a personality that was curious, encouraging, and slightly playful. It would express wonder at things the child did, ask questions, celebrate successes. It never scolded, never expressed disappointment, never showed frustration. And that's revealing. The personality was designed to be unconditionally positive, which sounds great, but it's also not how humans work. Real human relationships include friction, disappointment, repair. A robot that's always supportive and never frustrated is not modeling healthy human interaction. It's modeling a fantasy.
You're saying the ideal AI babysitter personality might need to include some negative affect, some friction, to be developmentally healthy. But then you're in the business of intentionally designing a machine that will occasionally frustrate or disappoint a child. Good luck getting that past a safety review.
The safety instinct is to make the robot maximally benign. Never say anything negative, never challenge, never push back. But a maximally benign presence might actually be worse for the child's development than a slightly more realistic one. This is where the whole project starts to look philosophically tangled. You're not just building a tool, you're building a relationship partner for a developing human, and you're making decisions about what that relationship should look like. That's not engineering, that's parenting by proxy.
The engineer who designs the personality is making parenting decisions for millions of children they've never met. That's an extraordinary concentration of influence.
It is, and it's almost entirely unexamined. There's no regulatory framework for what an AI companion's personality should be. There's no standard for what constitutes a developmentally appropriate relationship between a child and a machine. The companies building these things are making it up as they go, guided mostly by what keeps children engaged and what doesn't generate bad press.
Daniel asked about early prototypes and their implementation. We've covered iPal, Moxie, Tega, BunnyBot, Alpha Mini. Any others that are interesting?
There's one more worth mentioning, partly because it takes a completely different approach. A small startup in South Korea called Torok developed a robot called Liku that's specifically designed for children aged 3 to 7. What's different about Liku is that it doesn't try to be a conversational partner. It's a storytelling robot. It reads books, does voices, asks questions about the story, and uses a camera to gauge whether the child is paying attention. If the child looks away, it pauses and makes a sound to recapture attention. If the child seems scared, it adjusts the story. It's much narrower in scope than a general-purpose babysitter, but it's actually shipping. They launched in Korea in 2025, priced at around $400, no subscription. And the narrowness is a feature from a safety perspective. It can't go off script because it is the script.
It's a Kindle with eyes.
A Kindle with eyes and attention tracking. But that's actually a really smart design choice. By constraining the domain to storytelling, they eliminate most of the safety problems. The robot can't say anything inappropriate because everything it says is pre-approved. It can't form an unscripted emotional relationship because it only does one thing, and yet within that one thing, it's useful. It keeps a child engaged with books while the parent is cooking dinner. That's a real use case, and it's achievable with current technology without the existential risk of an open-ended conversational agent.
Maybe the answer to Daniel's question about whether this is happening is yes, but the smart implementations are narrow, not general. The general AI babysitter is the thing everyone imagines, and nobody has actually built safely. The narrow implementations, sleep detection, storytelling, basic monitoring, are already here and reasonably well adopted.
When people hear AI babysitter, they imagine a general-purpose robot that can do everything a human babysitter can do. Play games, prepare snacks, handle emergencies, provide comfort, enforce rules. That doesn't exist, and it's not close to existing. What does exist are narrow systems that do one or two things well. The danger is that the narrow systems get marketed as if they're general, and parents, who are exhausted and desperate for help, believe the marketing.
The Nanit doesn't claim to be a babysitter. It claims to be a monitor. iPal claimed to be a companion. The difference in framing matters.
It matters enormously. And it matters for liability, too. If your baby monitor fails to detect that your child stopped breathing, the company's liability is limited because it's a monitoring device, not a caregiver. If your AI babysitter fails to prevent your child from hurting themselves, the liability question is completely different. Are you suing the hardware manufacturer, the language model provider, the cloud service that went down, the personality designer? Nobody knows, because nobody has tested this in court yet.
The first case is going to be ugly. Some startup is going to field an AI babysitter that sort of works, a child is going to get hurt, and the legal system is going to have to figure out who's responsible for a harm, caused partly by a machine's action or inaction, and partly by the parent's decision to trust the machine.
We're already seeing previews of this with autonomous vehicles. The liability question is similarly tangled. But with children, the stakes are higher and the public reaction is going to be much more intense. Nobody is going to be rational about a case where a robot was supposed to be watching a child and the child got hurt. The headlines write themselves.
Let's talk about what a responsible implementation would actually look like, because I think Daniel's question deserves a constructive answer. If someone wanted to build this, not a general babysitter, but a useful, narrow, safe AI companion for children, what's the architecture?
I've thought about this quite a bit. First, you'd want all the sensitive processing to happen on device. No streaming of audio or video to the cloud. That means you're limited to a smaller language model, but for a narrow use case, that's fine. You don't need a trillion parameter model to read a story or detect crying. Second, you'd want the system's capabilities to be explicitly enumerated and communicated to parents. Not your child's AI friend, but this device reads stories, plays approved music, and alerts you if your child is crying or has left the designated area. Third, you'd want a physical kill switch, a button that completely disconnects the microphone and camera with a hardware interlock, not a software toggle. Parents need to know with certainty when the device is listening and when it isn't.
Hardware kill switch. That alone would differentiate a responsible product from most of what's on the market.
Fourth, you'd want the personality to be transparently artificial. No pretending to be human. No, I love you or I missed you. The robot should be clearly and consistently a robot, friendly, helpful, but not simulating emotional bonds. That's a design choice that would hurt engagement metrics, but it's the right thing to do developmentally. Children should know they're interacting with a machine. Fifth, you'd want a time limit. The device should not be able to engage a child for more than, say, 90 minutes continuously before requiring a parent to reauthorize. This prevents the set-it-and-forget-it scenario where the child spends hours alone with the machine.
The time limit is interesting. It frames the device as a tool for specific windows, dinner prep, a work call, not a lifestyle.
And sixth, you'd want full data transparency. Parents should be able to see exactly what the device recorded, what it said, what the child said to it, and they should be able to delete all of it with a single action. No, your data may be used to improve our services. No dark patterns. If you're putting a microphone in a child's room, the privacy standard has to be absolute.
That's six design principles. On-device processing, enumerated capabilities, hardware kill switch, transparently artificial personality, time limits, full data transparency. Has anyone built something that meets all six?
Not that I've found. Some products hit two or three. Nana does well on data transparency and enumerated capabilities, but it's a monitor, not an interactive companion. Moxie had a compelling personality but was cloud-dependent and the company folded. iPal had a kill switch. You could turn it off. But the marketing was deeply misleading about what it could do. Nobody has put all six together in a single product.
There's a gap. The responsible AI babysitter doesn't exist yet, but the design spec is clear.
I think that's actually the most useful answer to Daniel's prompt. The technology exists to build something narrow, safe, and useful. The obstacles aren't technical, they're economic and cultural. Building a responsible product costs more and generates less engagement than building an irresponsible one. The market doesn't reward the six principles I just outlined. It rewards the product that keeps kids glued to it longest and generates the most data, until that incentive structure changes. Through regulation, through consumer demand, through liability law, we're going to keep getting iPal and Moxie rather than the thing we actually need.
The question isn't, can we build it? It's, will anyone pay for the responsible version when the irresponsible version is cheaper and more engaging?
That's the whole AI ethics debate in one sentence. And with children, the stakes are just higher. The irresponsible version isn't just annoying, like a chatbot that hallucinates restaurant recommendations. It's potentially shaping a child's understanding of relationships, trust, and emotional connection during the most formative years of their life.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original framing. The human babysitter is weird too. The teenager who's underpaid and distracted and navigating their own development. That's also an imperfect solution. The question isn't whether the AI babysitter is perfect. It's whether it's worse than the alternatives in specific contexts, and whether we can be honest about the trade-offs.
I think the honest answer is, for narrow use cases with the right design principles, an AI monitoring and engagement system could be a net positive. A storytelling robot that keeps a 4-year-old occupied while a single parent makes dinner. That's not replacing human interaction. That's replacing the television or the tablet. The problem is when the narrow use case expands, when the marketing overpromises, when the economic pressure pushes parents to rely on the machine for more and more. The slippery slope is real, and it's greased by parental exhaustion and corporate profit motives.
The slippery slope is greased by parental exhaustion. That's the truest thing we've said.
It really is. Parents are tired. They're stretched. The promise of something that can watch the kids for an hour while they rest or work or just breathe, that's an incredibly powerful value proposition. And the companies building these things know it. They're selling relief, not technology.
Relief is the hardest product to say no to.
Which is why the design principles matter so much. If the product is designed to be narrow and transparent, it can provide relief without creating dependency. If it's designed to maximize engagement and simulate emotional bonds, it exploits the very exhaustion it claims to relieve.
Daniel asked about cost. We've covered that. $400 to $2,000 for hardware, sometimes with a subscription. But the real cost question is, what does it cost to build responsibly versus irresponsibly? What's the premium for the hardware kill switch and the on-device processing and the transparent personality?
I'd estimate the responsible version costs maybe 30 to 50% more to build, and it generates less recurring revenue because you're not selling subscriptions for cloud services and you're not monetizing data. So from a business perspective, it's a worse product. Higher cost, lower lifetime value. That's why nobody's building it. The market is selecting for the irresponsible version.
Which means if we want the responsible version, it's not going to come from the market. It's going to come from regulation, or from a non-profit, or from a company that's willing to leave money on the table as a matter of principle.
Or from an open-source project. There's a world where someone builds the software stack for a privacy-respecting, on-device AI companion and releases it under an open license, and parents build their own hardware. That's not a mass-market solution, but it's a way to demonstrate what's possible and put pressure on commercial products to match the standard.
The build-it-yourself, and shame-the-industry approach. I like it. Very Daniel, actually.
And it's not unprecedented. The open-source voice assistant space, things like Mycroft, before they shut down, showed that you can build a privacy-respecting alternative to Alexa and Google Home. It didn't win in the market, but it moved the conversation. An open-source AI babysitter could do the same thing.
To summarize what we found, and Daniel, if you're listening, here's your answer. Yes, people have experimented with AI babysitters. The most notable commercial attempt was iPal, deployed at scale in China starting around 2016, priced around $1,500 to $2,000. There have been research prototypes like MIT's Tega, NEC's Paparo, and the University of Washington's BuddyBot. There are narrow commercial products like Nanit for sleep monitoring and Liku for storytelling. None of them are general-purpose AI babysitters. The ones that try to be general tend to overpromise and underdeliver. The ones that are narrow work reasonably well. The hardware cost floor for a new prototype today is around $400 to $800 using off-the-shelf components. The real cost is in the software and the ongoing compute. And the gap between what's technically possible and what's responsibly designed is still.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.